Welcome to Regenerative Mindset. In this podcast, we'll explore fresh ideas and inspiring stories from trusted voices who share practical wisdom on bringing positive change to our lives, our society, and our world. I'm your host, Stacey Pollice. As a psychologist, regenerative farmer, and climate activist, I've developed a deep curiosity for thriving ecosystems. Whether it's on my avocado ranch in Southern California or in the ways we engage with each other. Join me as I chat with brilliant guests who challenge our thinking and expand our understanding of how we can live more sustainably, healthfully, and regeneratively, to give back more than we take. Together, we'll see how personal healing can create a ripple effect that reaches our communities and even the earth beneath our feet. So let's get curious together. In this episode of Regenerative Mindset, I am joined by Laurel Phillips, a licensed midwife, director of the Santa Barbara Birth Center, and the owner of Santa Barbara Midwifery. With decades of experience assisting healthy deliveries, Laurel has been a steadfast advocate for midwifery care and community birth centers, working to ensure that families have access to safe, holistic, and empowering birth experiences. Laurel shares her journey from an early fascination with childbirth to becoming a leader and advocate in maternal health care. Since 1996, she has been deeply involved in midwifery care, assisting hundreds of births and trainings through the National Midwifery Institute. Now the owner of Santa Barbara Midwifery, she continues to champion birth choices that honor both tradition and modern medical advancements. We explore the transformative role of birth centers, the proven benefits of midwifery-led care, and the systemic barriers that continue to sideline traditional birthing practices. Laurel also shares the guiding philosophy behind her work, that pregnancy and birth are profound, sacred life events rather than medical conditions that deserve care rooted in trust, dignity, and community support. So if you've ever wondered about natural childbirth, join me for an eye-opening conversation about the wisdom of midwifery and the urgent need to rethink how we support mothers, babies, and families. Hi, Laurel. How are you doing today? Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Stacey. I'm so excited to finally get to do this with you.
Well, so am I. And you and I have been talking for a while now. And I want you to know that I am making good on a promise I made 30 and a half years ago. My own home births using midwives changed my life so dramatically and my orientation and understanding of birth that I promised myself I would return and either write something about it or talk about it publicly. And so you're helping me do that right now. So thank you.
I'm honored.
Well, so let's start in with, how did you get to this place of being a midwife all these years and running a birth center? Can you just spend a minute telling me a little bit about your journey here?
I would love to. People have asked me this a few times, and I've tried to think really what was the beginning for me. I mean, I was one of those kids that was obsessed with babies, so I can't remember a time when I wasn't interested in pregnancy and birth and babies. But when I was 7, my mom and stepdad and I moved from Santa Barbara to Pacific Grove just for a year. And my mom became pregnant with my little sister. And when she was 8.5 months pregnant, we moved back to Santa Barbara and she was planning a home birth. And I'd been with her in Pacific Grove to all the childbirth classes. I read A Child is Born by Leonard Nielsen. I studied up on everything. I was planning to be at that home birth. I was the most educated 7-year-old you ever met about birth. So that should have been a clue. But as we were driving back to Santa Barbara, my 8.5-month pregnant mom, for some reason, was the one driving the U-Haul truck. And I was next to her. And they had this conversation with me before we did the drive, which was, okay, Laurel, if she goes into labor and has the baby, because second baby could come quick, you know, here's what you do. We've got the birth kit here. We've got the towels and the everything. We're going to pull over to the side of the road. And here's how you catch the baby. And here's what you got to do. And 7-year-old me said, great, sounds good, got it, you know, kind of hoping it'll happen. And I think the way that they spoke that, you know, expectation of me to me, as if this might happen and you better handle it, or we expect you could, I just thought, great.
You got the message, and the rest is history. Okay. I mean, that's big. Talk about empowering. Somebody empowered you. It's like, you can do this. Here's the things. Go. That's fantastic. I love that story. Can you just help people understand, like, what is a midwife and what do they do?
So a midwife is somebody who is trained, probably both through school and hopefully through an apprenticeship, which is a long one-on-one teaching experience in the field with an experienced senior mentor midwife who helps women have babies traditionally at home. And midwives also can help women have babies at birth centers and even in the hospital. But midwives have been the people who have been helping women have babies at home for as long as women have been having babies. So it's a very long time. And there's a whole lineage and body of knowledge of how to do that safely and alongside the wise body of a woman that's evolved over all those millennia. And in fact, the word midwife is an old English word that means with woman. So that says a lot about what a midwife does. Currently, being a midwife, especially in California, I can talk about that, is a blend of that very ancient lineage of knowledge plus very up-to-date, very evidence-based. I want to be careful of using the word medical because it's different than medicine, but it dovetails with what obstetrics and medicine is in the sense that we're very up-to-date clinically with everything that could and should be required for independent care of pregnant women.
So in my case, I switched from an OBGYN to the Santa Barbara Midwives, Mary Jackson's crew, and Anna Bunting and Alice Walker,
who are my foremothers and mentors.
Exactly. And they are heroines. And at the time, I just want to name my experience. It just was kind of nutty to make a choice like that. I lived on a ranch, which I live on now. And I was working with the head of the department. All the language was like, don't worry your pretty head. I've got this. We don't do episiotomy, which is a cut on the perineum, unless it's necessary, which it turned out is 90% of the time, he thought. Don't worry your pretty little head. I've got this. You just sit back. And I didn't like what I was hearing, but I had zero background. I knew no one who had ever had a home birth. And at the time, that was the only option in Santa Barbara, was a home birth. And the leap of faith that it required was, from the outside, a big deal. But from my own intuitive knowing, my body knew this makes the most sense. This sounds so right. And what I want to say is, they took care of absolutely all the same things that the OB was doing. We did all the same checks, all the same things.
Yes, that's something that I share with prospective clients at that initial consultation that I do, which is prenatal clinical care is very standard. So when people either switch from an OB to come to us or make the decision to come to midwives in the beginning, they're not foregoing some important medical care by coming out to the woods with the witches. And sometimes they're a little disappointed to hear that. And I say, oh no, we'll give you the witchy stuff if you want it. But as far as the actual clinical prenatal care, We're doing the same labs. We're doing the same frequency of visits. In fact, we're going to see you more frequently. What you're getting is a lot more time. So we'll be spending an hour with you at every visit, where a typical prenatal care with a physician is about 10 to 15 minutes. And that's just because it's a whole different model of care. A doctor visit, they're generally a much higher volume practice and they have to see many more people during a day. So we're keeping our practice smaller. We're spending a lot more time with people and we're focusing on really who are you? What's going on in your family? What are you eating? We want to see a full diet diary. How are you sleeping? What are you dreaming about? What's your relationship like with your mother? What are you envisioning for your birth? What's your work stress like? How are you taking care of your body? Who's going to take care of you after your birth? All of these things that go into the very complex individual and individual family. That is what's so important for us to know. And that's what allows us to build trust so that when we go into the birth, we are a trusted team of providers.
That all just rings so true. And there is so much that goes into a birth that our typical model, I don't know how we want to refer to it, but the normative model of birth doesn't take into account, like one's own birth experience, one's own sexual trauma history can find its way into a birth. I tell friends of mine who are pregnant, I say, you're going to want to do that work before you give birth because it can impact the birth. And the lore was, by Mary Jackson, who is an angel miracle worker. At the doctor's office, you'll wait an hour for a 15-minute appointment. And with the midwives, you'll wait 15 minutes for a one-hour appointment. And it was true.
Hopefully you won't even wait the 15 minutes.
Right, exactly. And I went to her home. And so everything felt comfortable. And we were deeply known in terms of our family history and our beliefs about the process. So there's a deep psychology to it that I want to name.
Thank you. There is so much psychology to it. We're wearing very many hats. And so this is about so much more than the safe extraction of a fetus from your body. And I want to give the caveat here that doctors are so busy and OBs are good people and they are slammed and the system is at fault here. There are no individuals at fault per se. It's really that the way that the insurance system is set up in our country, the way that, you know, this high volume system is set up. I'm sure that every OB you talk to would love to spend a lot more time with their patients. So I just want to get that out of the way, that this is not an us and them or a blame. We sort of fall into these two different camps. And one of the problems is that because we're outside the system, and we'll get into this later, because midwives have always been outside of that insurance system, it causes its own problems because therefore we don't take insurance. So we're not as accessible. So I do want to name, you know, thank you to the doctors who are accessible through people's insurance, who are doing the work, and they only can see people for 10 minutes. And that's a hard way to do care, and they're doing their best.
I'm curious to know another tidbit here, which is I've heard the word doula. I did not have a doula. I had midwife assistants. What's the difference between these three things, midwife assistant and a midwife and a doula?
So doulas are definitely part of the zeitgeist these days. It's a much better known word than it used to be. I think it's a word from the Greek. But a doula is someone who is trained to be emotional and physical support for a pregnant and birthing woman and postpartum. So they don't have any clinical responsibility. So while a midwife is trained to be a primary care provider, to actually do the prenatal care, be at the birth, catch the baby, manage complications, if someone comes to a midwife, they don't need to see a doctor. We are doing, as midwives, all of their care. So you could go to a doctor or you could come to the midwife. And a doula can support you in either situation through making suggestions for different kinds of positions to take in labor that might feel good, that might help the baby come. They probably know lots of supportive providers in the community, like acupuncturists or pelvic floor therapists that might refer to you. A postpartum doula might come into your home after the baby's born and help make nourishing meals, help educate you in newborn care. So they're like that expert sister friend who can just be beautiful support to you.
And what I'm aware of is how that felt to have that kind of support and to have nurturing and support so clearly named in this system, such that like postnatal, like the baby is born, mother and baby are getting to know each other. Baby is trying to learn about planet Earth. And there's a sign on the door that said, you may not come in unless you're here to just drop off food or drop something off to support the family. So I remember that layers of care. And it's so important. And we don't understand that in our culture normally.
One of the most important things we offer, I think, and one of the biggest differences between the midwifery model of care and the dominant model of care, you were looking for a word, I think that's one word we can use, is the dominant model of care, is in the postpartum time. Because really the typical scenario with that dominant model is that women are discharged from the hospital after birth, they go home, and they're not seen by their doctor until a 6-week visit. And you probably remember how much change happens between that second day after birth and 6 weeks. I mean, your milk comes in. I mean, a 6-week old is a completely different creature than a 2-day old baby. So having that support, you know, many, many visits and a lot of support around you is just absolutely essential for your physical well-being, for your physical safety, for the baby's well-being. Now you're taking your baby to the pediatrician, but that doesn't necessarily include really the mom's well-being. So that's where the doula comes in. That's where the midwives come in. So midwives are going to be coming to the home to be doing 4 in-home postpartum visits in the first 2 weeks alone. That's just routine in our practice. And then a postpartum doula, in addition, would be coming to your home and helping you in whatever way you agree. And that's just part of the culture, is that you tuck in bed with your baby and the support comes to you. And I remember one of those routine postpartum visits was on day 3. And that's generally the day when the milk comes in. Oh my gosh, what a roller coaster day. There's a saying that if the tears flow, the milk will flow. And I remember just my breast being big and hard and leaky, and you know, I'm sweating and bleeding and the baby's crying and my tears are flowing. And I think it was Mary Jackson was also my midwife, and she came and nothing was wrong. I was just leaking from every orifice and I was just a mess. And all the endorphins and the adrenaline from birth are starting to crash. You're on such a baby high for the first 2 days, and all of that is starting to crash. You haven't had any sleep, and all your prolactin with your milk is starting to come in, and it is just such a huge shift. And I just sat there and sobbed, and she just spoon-fed me chicken soup. Hardly said a word. So all she did was just spoon-feed me chicken soup. And I will never forget that. That's all I needed.
Oh my gosh. And these are things that maybe the grandmothers, or maybe every village had, I'm sure they had a midwife because every village needs one. I feel like there was so much education that happened in terms of, you know, how my husband or even my parents, you know, my mom had given birth 3 times, but she didn't have this wisdom, or she hadn't been given these tools and these ideas.
So if we didn't experience it, how do we know really how to pass it on? That's right. It's the whole culture.
And I do want to say, a memory I'm having is the midwives and the midwife assistants in the kitchens with these huge pots of these herbs. So you want to talk about the witches in the woods? Now I understand why women were considered witches, is because magic just happened. This is profound. They have these great powers and they're over these boiling pots, and the men are not allowed in unless they're here to help and, you know, just leave the meat at the door or whatever. And I remember that experience. But they had all these wise things. Like, I was to take teas that were going to help close out that pregnancy experience so things would heal. I was to sit in sitz baths every day of these special herbs. I felt like I was being held by ancient wisdom that had been passed down, like this red tent experience that was profound.
Yes, we still do all of that. We have a beautiful tea that we give women right after birth that has wonderful herbs that can just help the uterus firm up to help control bleeding. And what's really interesting is that we've noticed that if women by accident brew that tea thinking that it's the pregnancy tea that we give them, which is a wonderful tea to be drunk in pregnancy that helps them with mineral absorption and iron absorption. So there's a postpartum tea that we give them too. And if they mistakenly drink the postpartum tea during pregnancy, they think it tastes terrible. When we brew it for them right after birth, they say, oh, that is so good. Like, when we give it to them at just the right time, it's the most delicious thing they've ever tasted. It's really something.
This is an example of the miracle of all of the body and the plants and the wisdom that we can pass on.
It's really special and fun to keep all of those ancient things alive.
And to know there's a continuity with ancestry. And I don't know how culturally similar, different. I mean, is it multicultural, do you think, the way this gets passed down?
Oh, I think it's in every culture, because truly this is just the truth of womanhood and sisterhood and grandmotherhood, time immemorial. So every culture has their special ways of doing it. And every culture has been co-opted and had to reclaim those ancient ways. So, you know, midwifery has been facing a fight for its life, I think, across the globe, and has succeeded more or less to continue. And so it's really interesting to get to see what other cultures have done. And midwives like to travel and learn from each other. You know, what we do is kind of a mishmash, probably, of things that we've picked up along the way and herbs that, you know, grow here and that we can find. And every place has their own local traditions.
That makes sense. Like, it's got a lot of art to it. And the individual, in terms of how you educate and what exactly you use, is probably individual, I'm guessing. But there are similarities to all of it.
Well, it does get passed down too. And one of the really sweet privileges of this particular practice is that, you know, you mentioned Mary and Anna and Alice. I mean, this Santa Barbara midwifery practice has been in constant practice since the late 70s. And so it has been handed from midwife to midwife to midwife all those years. And there are some things that we say and do that have definitely been passed. You know, I hear the practicing midwives now, because I'm no longer in clinical care, I'm in the director role, say things that I remember learning from my mentor midwives 20 years ago. And so it is how things get passed down. It's really special.
I love all of this. What I'm thinking about is what impact it has on babies that are born in this model versus a hospital. Do you have anything to say about that? How important that is?
I love that question. Yes, that is such an important question. I remember years ago, one of the local pediatricians said to us, you know, I can always tell one of your babies because they are so much more relaxed in their bodies. So when she was getting to see them for their 1 to 2 week visit, it was just so notable to her, because pediatricians are seeing our babies a little later than they're seeing the other babies. And she just said, it's so clear that they had a different birth experience. And, you know, that was completely unprompted from her. And I thought that was such a lovely observation. So really, so much of this is about the birth experience for the mom, her autonomy, her ability to be her own decision maker in her pregnancy and her birth. We could talk for hours about all the reasons and importance about that. But there's this other person who's the baby, right? Who's getting born. And what about their experience? What is it like to come into the world? And what is that first experience like? Who's greeting you? Who's touching you? What's the temperature in the room? What are the lights like? What is the energy in the room, for lack of a better word? I mean, is it one of franticness or trust or urgency? How necessary is that urgency, if there's urgency? If something needs to be done, can it be done in a calm way that actually includes a kind of a permission when interacting with the baby, you know? And all of that is really possible, treating that baby's fresh little body with the utmost respect and doing it at a pace that, to the very best of our ability, allows for the baby to integrate what's happening is possible. That's not necessarily something that is thought about in the dominant model. And I think things become habitual and they become rote. And it's something that's very, very important in what we do. And really what we're trying to do is to not do anything unnecessary. So in the ideal birth situation, and actually in the typical birth situation at the birth center or at home birth, people have the option to do either. The mom can catch the baby. The dad can catch the baby. But if the midwife is catching the baby, you know, that baby is gently and slowly brought to the mom, and slowly and quietly, the mom can discover the baby's body. Maybe even the baby's born and just gently allowed to rest where it lands. And the mom, in her own time, can take a breath, reach down, pick the baby up, slowly discover the baby. You know, there isn't a rush, and our nervous systems evolve to just take a minute. And there is a lot of speeding up that happens right around that moment of birth. And there's a lot of tendency in the room. People get very activated and want to interfere and intervene. They want to do a lot of rubbing and drying and messing with that system. And actually, very, very little is required. If that baby has good tone, if that baby has good color, there's very little we need to do except pay close attention and allow the system to work as it is designed to do.
I'm telling you, you're sending me back to right now, my first birth, my daughter Remy, and it was a 48-hour birth process, labor, and it was all at home. And at one point, Mary just said, we need to progress because the baby's going to get tired. And so if you're okay, I'd like to see about maybe reaching in and turning the baby. Are you good with that? And I'm like, okay. Again, because there's all this trust, no panic, but you know, we need to do this. Otherwise, we'll want to transport, which means we'll go to the hospital. So she reached in, was able to turn her, and then the birth progressed and she was born. So it probably would have ended up possibly in Pitocin, meaning inducing, and possibly a C-section, because after that many hours, I don't think a hospital would let you even continue. But as it turned out, everybody was fine. And I remember her, she had a coating. I can't remember what it's called.
Vernix.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, it's really good. It protects their skin while they're in utero. But let's talk about it. If someone is listening, it's like, well, what about emergencies? Or what if something goes wrong? Because technically, you could say something didn't go perfectly in my case. It took too long. So talk about that a little bit. And talk about C-sections, because somebody just told me the other day, it's like, I know so many people that get C-sections. I don't know why that is. Is there a truth to that, that the dominant model actually leans a little heavier that way?
Sure. You packed a lot in there. I know that some question marks are going to be going off by what you said. Just to clarify, what you were talking about Mary doing was turning Remy from a posterior position to an anterior. So basically from being sunny side up, like facing up to facing down, not turning from breech to not breech. So I know people are going to go, what? How did she do that? So going from the kind of labor that causes back labor and a harder kind of labor to helping the baby turn to a better position that allows labor to progress. And so that's a nice midwifery trick to be able to do that. Time limits are, at least for the way that we tend to do birth, are somewhat arbitrary. So it's less important that it's been X number of hours and more important to be assessing kind of what you were reporting. Mary was saying, how's the baby doing? How are you doing? How's everyone's energy? How long have we been at this with change or no change? Has there been some change, steady change, slow change, no change? You know, and so it's kind of a gestalt assessment of the whole picture. And that's how we're making the decision to talk about doing something to help change happen, maybe a little more assertively than we have been. Are we going to consider IV fluids now? Has the mom been throwing up, you know, and we need to go to IV fluids to really keep her hydrated so that the labor doesn't just really poop out? You know, we're always trying to help things gently stay on course. We don't want a mom just running out her energy for, you know, no result. And part of a wise transfer is going to the hospital to use the tools that they have when the mom and the baby still have resources, physical, energetic resources, so that we still have a chance of a vaginal birth. We don't want to wait until the baby is throwing up a red flag and saying, I'm done. Because then it's too late to have that opportunity to use the tools that they have and have a vaginal birth. So it's based on experience and knowing what a bunch of small yellow flags are instead of waiting for a big red flag. And that's kind of one of the art and sciences of midwifery, is knowing how to factor in that transfer time, how to look at all those different things that are going on and make that assessment together with the family that, okay, it's probably time, you know, to do the next thing and go to the next venue. So for us, that's the vast majority of our transfers, and that's about 13%. And it's usually almost always a first time mom. It's usually a first labor that has a labor that's just kind of gotten to a stuck place that for all of our bag of tricks, you know, we haven't been able to get really back on track and progressing, and we're going in for what they have at the hospital, and we go on to have a vaginal birth.
Do you mean to say that the hospitals don't have as many tricks in their bags, so maybe more births end in a C-section than those that are under the care of a midwife? They might have fewer?
Most of those tricks are going to come down to whether you have a nurse who's able to spend the time with you and knows those things. And I think that that's kind of hit or miss, or whether you have a doula with you. And that is where the doula really shines in the hospital. So I would highly recommend that anyone who's planning a hospital birth hire a doula, because that's what they are doing, is saying, let's try this position. Let's go do this. Let's try the tub. Let's go do some squats. It's being active and really giving your body every chance to help the baby do this descent and rotation that they need to do. The baby has a job in labor, which is to make its way through the pelvis. And so the more active and mobile that you are in labor, the better the baby's able to do that. So part of the C-section problem is that when someone has an epidural right from early labor and they're mostly just lying down in bed, it's harder for the baby to do that descent and rotation. So birth is evolutionarily designed to be in an upright, active body. So when you're lying down and numb, it's harder for the baby to do their part of it and more likely for the position to get kind of stuck and stalled out.
That's really not known. And you never see on a TV or a movie a woman moving about. You see them lying on their back.
Very few women, given the choice, would choose that position. Pretty much if you ask them to lie on their back and they are not medicated or numbed, they will be getting right up out of that position saying, no, 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 no. It doesn't feel good. It's very rare that they'll choose that on their own.
Well, so, okay, you said that there's, you know, different venues that you assist with births, and one of them is a birth center. And I know we have a lovely birth center, Santa Barbara Birth Center, that you are the head of, and that's a big, big role of yours now. Can you talk about birth centers and how that came about and how well is that concept doing?
So birth centers are essentially a home away from home for people to have their baby. They are a place that is a home-like place that is equipped for birth. And a few of them are alongside units, so they're associated with a hospital. So a hospital might have a birth center that really kind of feels like an independent birth center, but it's next to a hospital. But really, the definition of a birth center is that it is only low-risk women. It's not doing things like epidurals or C-sections. It's not just a labor and delivery suite. So they might call it a birth center, but a freestanding birth center is a place that is not doing medical interventions. It's really geared towards low-risk, low-intervention midwifery care. So that's what the Santa Barbara Birth Center is. And we are the only freestanding birth center in Santa Barbara County. And we've been around, this is our 14th year now. And it is kind of a wow. I think the average lifespan of a freestanding birth center is about 5 years. So we made it.
How many are there in California? Do you know stats? Like, are there a lot of birth centers state by state? Does it really depend on the state?
I think there are about 30. I may be wrong, and I can tell you this. I can definitely look it up. What I do know is that 19 birth centers in California have closed in the past 5 years.
Whoa. Can you say why? Why would that be?
It's very hard to run and sustain a birth center. I mentioned earlier this thing about midwives being outside of the insurance system. And so that's really why. So I had also mentioned about how midwifery care is so time intensive. So where a doctor visit might be 10 minutes or, you know, at best 15 minutes, every visit of ours is an hour. And we're doing these in-home postpartum visits. So the midwives are constantly driving 20 minutes, doing an hour and a half postpartum visit in someone's home, driving 20 minutes. So it's very time intensive. It's expensive to provide. It's a model of care that results in excellent, excellent outcomes. So our C-section rate is 5%, where the national C-section rate is over 30%. Even if you correct for, okay, maybe someone has twins, maybe someone has a complication, maybe someone has, you know, a reason that they absolutely have to have a C-section. If you take all those away and you just compare apples to apples, our practice to the hospital practice, you get our 5% C-section rate and a 24.9% C-section rate. So it's still a huge disparity. The point being that midwifery care has really, really good outcomes. And there are other metrics that we can look at too to see the good outcomes, high breastfeeding rates. We're paying really close attention to mental health. But, you know, all that time means that what regular insurance is willing to pay us. You know, you wanted to come to me, Stacey, as our pregnant client, and you said, hey, I've got Anthem. Do you take Anthem? And I said, sure, I'm going to contract with Anthem. What Anthem would pay us would be like $1,200, where it's going to cost me, you know, $7,500 to even run my business to cover one patient. Like, there's just no way.
I think I remember at the time, 30 and a half years ago, that the cost was the same, which is weird now that you're describing it in detail. How many more hours of effort go into a midwife birth versus a doctor? But it seems like the cost was the same at the time. Is that true now? Like, what you charge is the same. It's just that insurance pays for the medical one.
Insurance is going to cover the medical part. I wouldn't even know how to know what it would cost if you were paying completely out of pocket.
At a hospital.
Oh, the hospital. If you were paying out of pocket, the hospital is going to cost by a factor of 5 what we cost. Way more. It's going to be way more expensive. But people have insurance. And if they don't, they have Medi-Cal, which is going to pay even better, right? So hardly anyone is going in uninsured anymore. You have to have insurance. So it's not really a comparison that we can make anymore because there are very few uninsured people. So the cost of a birth is many times more than what we charge in the hospital. But most people will have insurance that covers some part of it. Now, that said, even if they do, once they get through the whole hospital process with the deductible, with the co-pays, with the additional costs for this person and that person and the extra Tylenol and the epidural and the, God forbid you have a C-section, what you end up paying even with insurance could definitely be more than what you would be out of pocket for us. And that has happened. So we've had clients come to us for their second baby saying, you know, we wanted to come to you for our first baby, but we didn't because of the cost, the out of pocket cost. And so we went to the hospital thinking, oh, it was all going to be covered. And then when we got the bill at the end of everything, it was more than it was even going to cost with you. So now we're coming to you. So anyway, back to your question about birth centers and the sustainability and why are they closing? That's why, because midwives are rescuers. Midwives are do-gooders. Midwives want to take care of everybody. And so a lot of those birth centers that have closed have been trying to contract with Medi-Cal. They've been trying to contract with insurance and just make it work with the piddly amounts that they have been offered. They've been trying to keep their prices low. We keep our prices low. No one is getting paid what they should in our staff. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's true. I mean, we have highly educated midwives who could be making a lot more if they were working at the hospital. And, you know, they're in it for the heart of it. We're in it because this is the best job in the world when you get to see and participate in birth done right. I mean, there's just nothing like it, you know? And so we hang in there. But financially, it's very, very hard to sustain.
Well, it's a sacred event, is what it really is. And I know that that's the feeling. And I remember thinking in my own birth that there is a similarity in that sacred energy that was evoked that felt like being present at a death. And now I'm aware of something called a death doula, and it's just something unique and special. And I know that Native American tribes, communities, that's how they speak of birth as well. It's a natural event and it should be supported, you know, for what it is, because it contributes to a different type of a world.
It's so true. And oh, there's so much in what you just said. I mean, there's such a strong spiritual element to it. There's such an important reverence that we need to hold for the transition of a soul into the world as well as out of the world. I mean, oh my gosh, we could talk about that. I would love someday, when I'm not doing this, to do the death work because I have been able to be present with a number of people who are passing on in that direction. And it is just as sacred, and it does have that same kind of feeling and privilege. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think there's a trend to recognizing the importance. I think we are moving in the right direction. I have a feeling that, you know, maybe it's because the US has this dismal ranking in maternal mortality worldwide, and it's just not a good look. And we're last, we're dead last in industrial nations for maternal mortality.
You are kidding.
I'm not. And so everyone knows we've got to do better. And one of the solutions that keeps coming up is, hey, these midwives have great outcomes. What are they doing? What can we do to help women access midwifery care? That's got to be part of the solution. So the ship, the big, big ship, is slowly starting to turn. And I am really hopeful that over time, we are going in the right direction, and that what midwives have been doing all along is really starting to be recognized as important work. And that's so exciting. It's so exciting. You know, we'll see. Hopefully, you know, the insurance companies will start to understand that not only is it the right thing to do for human beings and babies and families and women, but that guess what? It's going to save them money too.
Well, and save lives is what you're saying. There's actually mortality as an issue. And what that makes me want to look at is, I remember learning back in the day that other countries actually use midwives. And I don't know if they use doulas. I don't know if they use birth centers. Tell me more about that. What you know about other countries. Now, do they always have socialized medicine? So if the government is trying to do the calculus on how are we going to, you know, take care of birthing our population, they've done the research and the math, and midwifery is the safest and best cost-efficient way to do it. Is that true? Because that's what I thought I remembered.
Yes, you're right. You're definitely on to the answer. And whether the government is going to figure that out and whether healthcare now is going in the right direction, boy, I can't tell you. But the countries that use midwives as primary care providers for pregnant women and that have universal health care are the ones that have the highest standing in the world for good outcomes. So New Zealand, Norway, Netherlands, you know, most of Europe, I mean, the UK, if you're pregnant, you see a midwife. And if something complicated comes up, then, you know, you consult with a doctor. But everyone knows if you're pregnant, you see a midwife. It's just how it is.
Isn't that something? So old beliefs die hard, I guess. We just think what we think is normal and safe, that you're safer in a hospital, when actually that may not be true. Well, okay, talk to me more about birth centers, about our local birth center. They obviously are a good idea, but they don't make it past 5 years because of a lack of support from insurance. So people have to pay out of pocket. Yeah. So what's your status at Santa Barbara Birth Center?
Well, we have squeaked along on a shoestring, and we started 15 years ago, and it took us a year or two to get a board together and to fundraise. So we formed it as a nonprofit because, knowing that we would be outside of this insurance system, we wanted to make sure that there was some avenue to mitigate the cost for low-income people. So that solution, that idea was, let's be a nonprofit and let's be able to apply for grants and do community fundraising so that we would have some pool of money that we could use as a subsidy fund. So that if someone who could not afford the facility fee for the birth center came to us saying, I want to use your care, but I can't afford it, then we would have basically like a scholarship fund that we could say, okay, we have money where we can, you know, meet you halfway, or we can cover most of the cost. And so we've given out, over the time that we've been open, I think it's now $123,000 That's all through community donations and some grants. And, you know, it's just thank you to the people of Santa Barbara who have wanted this birth center here, wanted us to stay open. And that's just the subsidy fund. There's been other donations that have gone towards operating support. And this birth center belongs to Santa Barbara. This is a nonprofit birth center. So people tried for a long time to open a birth center in Santa Barbara. And I was a new midwife. I think I got licensed the same year that we opened our doors. And I had been a midwifery student and a doula for a long time. I was a long time midwife student. And I'd just been hearing people say for so long, where is the birth center in Santa Barbara? And the need was so clear because people who wanted a home birth but weren't comfortable in their home for whatever reason, maybe they had roommates or they were too far from the hospital, you know, were ending up having a hospital birth when it's not what they really wanted. And so creating a birth center was just so clearly a need. And back in the day, we also had St. Francis and we had Goleta Valley, which were also birth options, you remember, but those both closed. And so then we just only had one hospital or home birth. That wasn't the best option for everybody. So the timing was right. We had so much support. It just felt like everywhere we turned, we had a yes. You were part of that support. I mean, thank you. You know, you were there right in the beginning. Gosh, it just came together and it happened. And here we are all these years later. So it's kind of been by the skin of our teeth, but we've made it this far. And it's not any easier. It's actually harder. We do maintain medical malpractice insurance. We have to. We have a board of directors. We're, you know, we're kind of a big boat to float. And out of the blue, that more than doubled. And that one line item was enough to almost sink us. I mean, it went from $33,000 to $76,000 in 1 year, just out of the blue for no reason. We've never had a claim.
Is that a local problem or is that a national problem?
I think it's a national problem. I think everyone's insurance everywhere for everything is going up. But for a line item for us, it was almost more than we've been able to cope with. It kind of went from just stasis for us to just we've hardly been able to get out ahead of it. So things like that, the birth rate's going down, frankly. COVID was a great bump for us. Everyone stayed home for 2 years and got pregnant. No, not so much.
So birth rates, is that why they close? Is that one of the reasons why birth centers close?
Possibly. I mean, I think Cottage Hospital's noticing it too. The birth rate's just down everywhere. And it's a general trend. So there's challenges. But what I do know is that this place is beloved. I mean, there is not anything else like it. And it's so important. It's kind of like you mentioned the death doula. You know, when my grandma died, I brought her home to die in my home. It was 20 years ago or more now. But it was one of those things like when you need hospice, you don't know what they do or how amazing they are until you need them. And then you just think, oh my gosh. Thank God for hospice. They do that thing that you so need right then. And it's the same with the birth center and with midwives. Until you're in that moment in your life where you need those people to hold you in that way, you just don't know. You don't know that we need that place and those people to be there to hold us. And so I think it's kind of hard to educate unless you've been there and you've needed us. And then we've got you for life.
And that is absolutely true. And I can speak from experience on both. My mom passed in November and I had hospice there for her. And it was beautiful. And you say they know exactly when to be there and when to step back, how to support. There's so many services. It feels like so much generosity. And there's an understanding that this is all okay. This is all part of life. As the same thing with the midwives with birth is that I felt that level of trust that you talk about. I felt safe. I felt more relaxed. So I was a better new mother, I think, to my babies because I was relaxed. I felt calm. It didn't feel like this is something strange and unknown happening here or a problem. And I believe that makes a difference in a baby's life. And I'm going to mention a man from our community, Ray Castellino, who did, you know, all that pre-birth work and post-birth work on the outcomes of babies. And it makes a huge, huge difference to have a mom that feels supported. But also, I want to say that analogy to hospice, there is government insurance funding for hospice, right?
I'm not the best person to speak to that. I think probably so. I think you're probably not so much out of pocket for hospice the way that I've been talking about us.
I thought a lot of it is Medicare pays hospice. There's something like that. And so it's not a financial burden. In fact, it's an unburdening, which is interesting, which would be so wonderful to unburden birth.
I would love it if we could take this metaphor all the way through.
Okay, we have something to work with. What I want to do is say, you know, this podcast, Regenerative Mindset, and midwife birthing, birth centers, home birthing, to me, it's just a no-brainer in terms of this is part of nature. I got sheep today, and three are pregnant ladies. So I was asking the man I bought them from, oh, what do we need? He said, you need nothing special. It's a normal, natural process. The only time we lost a baby was when we tried to intervene. And I'm like, okay, message received. So what I want to know is what might be some takeaways that you would like listeners to have? You know, what are some things that you'd love for us to know, key ideas, why it's important, why midwifery matters, why birth centers are important places to support?
One thing is that there's so much fear in our culture about birth. Anyone who has spent any time watching movies or TV shows and absorbing information about birth that way knows that. And I love being part of something that supports people rediscovering and being supported in remembering who they really are, what their bodies are capable of, what their bodies already know. And it's so much a part of what's important that we do as human beings right now. And that dovetails with this regenerative agricultural movement. I mean, we need to remember we're living on an earth who knows exactly how to take care of herself already. And there's only a problem because we have interrupted a very complex system that works perfectly well. Same with birth. We are at, you know, kind of the tail end of an arc of a lot of interruption that's unnecessary, a lot of intervening that's unnecessary. And what we need to do is take what we've learned, which is a lot, and it's important, and now understand what we don't know and what we need to do by doing nothing. What we don't do is as important as what we do. And midwives understand that. So when we're at a birth with someone, half of the art and science is in the watchful waiting and the close observation and the loving care that we're bringing. And that's non-intervention. Doesn't mean doing nothing, but we're paying attention with love. The other half of it is knowing when to step in and when to do something. And so we need to learn that and understand that as people. We've done too much doing and intervening. So that's part of it. Another thing that is important to me for people to know came up the other day when I was working with my assistant with some promotional materials that we were preparing. And I was starting to get really cranky when I kept seeing this word empower come up in all of the stuff we were writing. And I kept saying, there's that word again, strike it, strike it. And he was saying, why is that word bothering you so much? And I said, you know, okay, why is that word bothering me so much? And it's because I finally realize we're not here to empower anybody. We're not empowering women. That is so, what's the word I'm looking for?
Presumptive.
It is.
The woman needs to be empowered rather than get out of the way.
Yeah, there's this one word I'm trying to think of. It's not sort of patriarchal, but it's...
But it's not.
You're exactly right. The point being, she's got all the power she needs. And our job is to witness and to support and to hold and to be in awe. And that is what we regularly do. I mean, to watch a woman unfold in her journey of pregnancy and birth and postpartum, and we might have helpful suggestions, but there's not a transfer of power here. She has got it already in her. And wow, is it a privilege to get to see that happen and to get to see her discover it if, in fact, she's not quite aware of it yet. That's another important thing. Another thing is that birth centers and midwifery care are really for almost everybody. So most people, like 80 to 90% of pregnancies, are low risk. And midwifery care is really appropriate for just about every pregnant person. We're here and excited to meet you and find out about you. And I really just want people to know that we're here and doing our very best to be as accessible as possible, and want to help you have the very best experience possible on your journey.
Well, I know that friends of mine who did use the Santa Barbara Birth Center had the most incredible experiences. And it's inspiring. And I am re-inspired hearing you speak of it. One other thing I want to name is that we haven't talked a lot about men, but men are welcome. I mean, it's a very female trade, shall we say. And absolutely, you know, the men are welcome. They're part of it. And it's a whole family bringing together, which is so holistic and beautiful.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, that is so true. And, you know, the men, women, you know, I do want to say a word about language, you know, gendered language. I mean, we have binary clients, we have non-binary clients, we have two moms, moms and dads. I default to using women because that's just the most straightforward way to talk about this. But I just want to acknowledge that not everyone who is having a baby is identifying as a woman or as a mother. So partners are completely a valued part of the process. And we also have single moms coming through. And so they may be truly feeling solo in the process, or they may have someone coming in to support them who is not a partner or a life partner or romantic partner. So, you know, family dynamics can be very unique and complex. But in terms of dads and partners, yes. And so we really want to make this about that family unit and make it as inclusive as possible for them, and especially in the birth room, however they want it to be is fine. So again, partner can catch the baby, you both can get in the birth tub. We want this to be about us supporting, you know, the two of you or the three of you, as it may be. Like I said, we've had all kinds of dynamics.
Thank you so much for coming and talking about this. It's been such a gift to me to hear you speak of it in depth and to remember this profound gift of midwifery in my own life and to know that it's here in the community.
I really appreciate the chance to share about it. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you for tuning in. If today's conversation inspired you, you can help us reach more people by sharing this episode with friends or leave a review. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. For additional resources, you can visit my website and stay connected with me on social media. A big thanks to the amazing team that makes this podcast possible, including Phil Svitek, Brianna Phipps, Leah Pellegrini, Melissa Walbridge, and Courtney Hamilton. When we all work together, we can create a world where positive change is not just possible, but inevitable.